a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Folks, it's 9:06 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. You know how we do it. Thursday's 9 o'clock hour, we do something we call the MGO Blog Roundtable. It can be a very informative segment where we really dissect things. You can also see fisticuffs nearly break out between Ed Fang and Brian Cook, who will be with us shortly. From MGO Blog.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure you don't.
Two violins and a symphony.
Well, people
were in harmony.
People were thinking a couple of weeks ago, they said, man, are those guys, are they going to get into it? Were they about to fight? No, they weren't about to fight.
Just a
heated discussion like we get into from time to time here on MGO Blog Roundtable.
I disagree with that. I thought they were about ready to fight 2 weeks ago. Ed and Brian, I think, are friends, but they were about. Yeah. They came close.
Yeah, that was after Michigan State. It was after Michigan
support,
State. So emotions were understandably heightened by the outcome of that game. But
because we're completely calm this week.
Let's get the it's a different scenario. Look, Michigan State is a game they absolutely should have won. We might be surprised by the margin of Penn State's victory, but I'm not surprised Penn State won that game. This year they're the better, more experienced team. I had that as a loss. We talked about Penn. Remember before the season we talked about Penn State, and I was saying, hey, you know, Penn State's going to be a beast this year. That's the toughest game on the schedule, in my opinion, and I still think it's going to wind up being the toughest game on this year's schedule for Michigan, understanding there are other tough games. So let's get the intros out of the way. Starting off, of course, with the elder statesman of the crew. I call him the Venerable Craig Ross. Craig, tell the people about your books, the books that you've authored.
I've written two books, Seed and Diaries of a Michigan Fan and The Search for the Unified Field Theory Football Version. I'm working on now another book on Michigan football history going back to pre-1900. So that's it.
There you go. Nice. All right. Ed Fang, he is the guy that brings some statistical analysis to the fold for us from the Power Rank. Tell folks about the Power Rank.
I make football predictions, March Madness predictions, and today I have some interesting line numbers that I'd like to talk about on Michigan.
All right. ThePowerRank.com. And then, of course, from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how you doing this
Hello.
Morning? You all right?
Yeah, I just scraped my car.
What did you? What?
I had to scrape my car.
The windshield.
The windshield, yeah.
Okay, why do I mean.
I thought you was like, you scraped your car against someone else's car.
That
would be bad.
You guys live in Michigan, you know what that means? No, you don't.
Right. All right. So, guys, this game, you know, as I said in the setup, I was surprised by the margin of victory for Penn State, but not surprised at all by the victory for Penn State. I'm curious what you guys thought of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, we all had Penn State winning, I think. But no one, or at least I'm surprised by what happened in the game. I felt Penn State played a really good game. I thought McSorley made some plays. I also thought we did some fairly incredible things. On the second play of the game, for example, the 69-yard Barkley run. For some reason, probably because he was very excited, Gary runs 5 yards
up the field,
leaves the backside wide open, and bang, it's gone. If he holds his gap, that play isn't doing much.
You see, ironically, you know, in the game, the commentators were like, you know, this is a wrinkle Penn State threw in, and Michigan wasn't ready for it. And Rashawn was like, hey, Don Brown actually put this in and practiced this week. We had seen it. We had seen the, you know, Wildcat, and you know, it hit.
Well, yeah, it hit. The first one hit, and then they did it 5 more times, and those gained a total of 15 yards. So that little wrinkle Michigan was prepared for. There were a couple other things that they were not prepared for. I mean, the thing that just jumped out at me is that Michigan had safeties like 15 yards deep, so whenever they went to zone, that RPO, that slant, was wide open. Mm. I don't know if you can get away with that.
Brian, explain RPO.
A run pass option, so you fake a run, and what's more than that, the offensive line actually blocks the run. And as long as they're not more than 3 yards downfield, you can still throw. So you've got Saquon Barkley. You have a Heisman candidate, and you're obviously going to react to him when he's a threat to get the ball. So whenever Michigan showed a pretty obvious zone, they'd fake that handoff and they'd run a slant, and that's why all those slants were wide.
Right, and see, it seems like they're in peril either way, because if you put the safeties up in man-to-man, well...
Well, I mean, you don't have to put them in man-to-man. You can put them in a tighter zone like Penn State was running against us or Michigan State runs. But if you put them at 15 yards, I mean, that's just a tough ask in modern football.
So. And so, you know, what I found in this contest wasn't Penn State reinventing the wheel. I felt like other teams had tried to attack Michigan's safeties in coverage. I felt like other teams had tried to attack their linebackers in coverage. Just that Penn State was exceptional, and they were effective at doing what other teams tried to do.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of those deep shots to Gesicki, and I was reviewing them. I'm like, can anyone actually do anything about this? I was like, sort of. Like, there are ways to play that better, but some of those still come down with completions. The deep shot to Metellus, I don't think Charles Woodson does anything about. Like, sometimes you just get got. And then Cannell got hit on one that he could have played better. But that was really the only one where I felt like the defensive back really had a problem. And the other deep shots were just like, well, they got us.
So do you feel like – so you remember there's been this narrative about Trace McSorley that he's lucky. Do you feel like he's more good than lucky now?
Well, if you look at his numbers this year, they kind of dropped off a cliff. And, like, Gesicki's averaging 8 yards a catch. I don't know if they were just rope-a-doping for the last month, which they might have been. But
I mean, they certainly
– I mean, good God.
I mean, there've been a lot of blowouts in some of their games that they've had this year. So, I mean, they certainly performed, and all his deep throws are pretty spot on.
Yeah, I think he missed one, which is a good deep ball thrower.
I can't disagree with that. Now, I mean, I think I don't know. I thought they were fortunate. I thought the first six games of the season played that out, that they're not as good as they were at the deep ball. And now I'm like, well, I guess that was. Whoops.
You know, I guess I'm curious from you guys' perspective, based on what you've seen other teams do, for instance, to Penn State, and adjustments that you've seen other teams make. Look, copycat league, copycat game. Teams are going to try to game Michigan in the same ways. They might not be as successful as Penn State, like the first six teams weren't, but there might be an occasion where you know, there is a matchup in the slot where, you know, you got a guy that's taking advantage of Michigan safety. Or there might be a matchup where it's not ideal for your linebacker to be on. They won't face another guy as good as Saquon Barkley, but a running back that's pretty good. What are some counters that you see Michigan kind of employing as we move along?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure they need counters. I mean, I just think Penn State executed at a fairly high level, and I think there's
one thing that jumps out.
What, the holding penalties that weren't called?
Don't put Mike McCray in one-on-one coverage with a Heisman candidate.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, he had a lot of problems with Dalvin Cook, and I can see him out of – what's the Ohio State guy's name?
Whatever.
Dobbins. That guy.
Dobbins, yeah.
I can see him having problems with that guy, too. So that's the one thing I agree with Brian. Like, what are you going to do there? He's 250 pounds. Like – he's not going to be able to cover elite running backs.
You have Hudson on the field for a reason, and like maybe he'll get beat similarly. But it's not just the world's most obvious terrible matchup. And you're putting Mike McCray in man-to-man coverage against Saquon Barkley. That's not going to go well. And they got away with it once because McSorley overthrew his guy, but he was open. And then the touchdown they got was...
He dropped one.
Yeah, he dropped one.
He dropped for sure.
You know, I've heard, you know... people on radio, on your show, Sam, saying, you know, that Don Brown just sort of blew it in this game and criticized him by saying we should have played a more conservative defense, that we should have sat back in zone. But, I mean, it's just not Don Brown. I mean, he's not going to do that. And Iowa, for example, did slow Penn State down some by –
They had 600 yards in that game. Like, they were very fortunate not to give up a similar number of points.
Okay. I mean, and that's quite plausible, but they did only score, what, 19 or 20, and they had to score in the end.
It was like the
don't bend but don't break.
Right.
And I heard some of that, but to me, it isn't Don Brown. It isn't what's worked. I mean, the truth is, with the exception of this game and maybe Ohio State in year one, not Ohio State in year one, that was Durkin, but we really haven't had a terrible
game. I think that one of the things that Don has been exceptional with is making adjustments. And, you know, I agree with the notion that you don't scrap what got you here.
Right.
His aggressive style is what has come to define a really, really good year and a half of defense here for Michigan. But we saw him make an adjustment in the game where he kicked LeVert Hill inside as a nickel and put him in coverage over the slot. Now, it didn't stop him.
No.
But it seemed like it plugged the dike a little bit more.
Yeah, and I might have rolled with that the whole game. I mean, that's kind of – because how much impact did Tyreek Cannell have against the run? Not really. He came up and missed a couple tackles when he was a safety. But Michigan was, for the most part, just going with that front six, front seven against the run. And, you know, with some – I mean, that was the game plan. And so if that's the game plan – you might as well have all three of those corners out there because, I mean, they were going after that slot, and we saw what happened when Hill was on the slot. And those outside receivers, I don't know if they got targeted more than two or three times in the game.
Right.
Well, I mean, David Long had the pick, and then I don't think I saw him in the rest of the game get targeted.
Yeah, like Watson was –
and then Watson was out there the entire game, too, and like, on the outside.
I didn't have a point for or against Watson the whole game. They're just like, nah. So we saw Indiana go try to get to Simi Cobbs a lot in the Indiana game, and that simply didn't work. And Penn State was just like, we're not going to do that. We're just going to ignore our outside receivers for the most part.
And it worked. So, I mean, you tip your cap. You know, they had a great plan. They executed. And then they have arguably the best player in college football in Trace McSorley, who is –
Wait. You mean Saquon Barkley, right?
Saquon Barkley, yeah.
You said McSorley.
And then Trace McSorley, a quarterback that we are, I think quickly coming to the conclusion collectively that this guy is just pretty doggone good. Maybe he was lucky last year, but he's evolved into being a pretty good quarterback.
Right.
And when Michigan, when they started, this was the thing, you know, when they start, you know, keying on Saquon Barkley to the point of kind of ignoring everything else, man, he really went to work with his legs.
Well, I thought that was actually fine for the most part. Michigan was relying on their defensive line to win one-on-one battles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you have to do that if you're going to defend a spread offense. And McSorley's runs saw either Brian Monet or Noah Furbush, and on one night it was actually Hurst and Furbush, get blown out. And if you can't at least hold the line of scrimmage and make a tackle there, there isn't going to be anyone back there because that's the stress that offense puts on you. So I thought tactically the plan made sense because we hadn't seen anyone being able to cope with Michigan's defensive line all year.
Right.
And, you know, you have a situation where Monet has a couple of bad plays and Furbush tips that he's kind of coming in at this one point. And those are the plays where McSorley breaks it, except for one inverted veer early in the second half.
Well, the inverted veer on the second drive where they scored their second touchdown where he gained about 25 yards. McCray scraped outside and had the outside edged. I mean, he'd covered it.
Yeah.
And then you're right. Monet gets blocked and stalemated. But
it was worse than that. He got...
Yeah. But number 10, Bush, comes into the gap, and number 71, who's the holding king in the Big Ten, is holding...
When is the last time Michigan's holding call?
They had a couple against Michigan State. They turned down.
But
that's the last time.
We could talk about those holding calls sometimes in the Michigan State game, but 10 gets thrown out, just hauled and thrown out of the gap.
I thought he did that to himself.
I don't think so. And so, to me, that play was strictly...
Okay, Ed.
Okay, Ed. Sorry. But in any event, I mean, look.
You are taking a place ahead this time, don't they?
The hardest thing in football, in defensive football, is defending a running quarterback. You got a quarterback who can run it and throw it. It becomes redcoats versus revolutionaries, and it's a hard way to go when a guy like McSorley can do both. And so,
yeah, I mean. Opinion. I think we should talk about the fact that Devin Bush had a bad game.
Bad game.
All right, we'll get to that on the other side. It's 9:20 on a Thursday morning. We got to get to a break. The phone lines are open at 734-998-1050. The MGO Blog Roundtable. You can get in if you have questions, comments. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA.
Thanks for that, Ira. That's Pump It Up, Elvis Costello.
Should be playing
that at the stadium. All right.
We are back, folks. Just for you, Craig. Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. What do you listen to these days, Craig?
Still punk rock. I'm stuck
you
in.
You listen to punk rock?
Yeah.
That's trash.
I mean, I'll listen to opera, too. I like opera.
Punk rock and opera.
They're the same.
The only thing that would be more odd
that's right,
is that
both
punk rock and opera are the same?
Yeah, they are.
Well, they're both bad, so
no,
that's...
they're both good.
Oh, no, that's a wrong opinion.
Craig, a punk rock?
I mean, yeah, saying punk rock is bad is saying, like, all blogs suck. I mean, it's like...
No, it's different.
Exactly.
If there was a genre of blog that was like, we suck on purpose... Joe Jackson
came out of the punk movement, best musician of my lifetime.
I don't know who that is.
So that's my point.
Neither do I. I mean, is this an age specific thing or is this a genre thing? Is that why we don't? When was Joe Jackson like?
Joe Jackson was post Talking Heads, like around 1980. He started.
Wasn't he involved in the Black Sox scandal?
No, that's a different
Joe Jackson. Joe Jackson.
Yeah. Shoot, no.
Well, you could have been around for that.
I was almost around for it.
9:26 on a Thursday. So before we went to the break, we were talking defense for Michigan, obviously an off game for them.
So I was impressed with how confused Michigan's linebackers were this first half. So you have those option runs, and as soon as there's like this counter step to the inside zone, both linebackers bury themselves in the line. And... I mean, credit to Penn State for realizing that Michigan was reading that quickly and going to overreact because those first two options were wide, wide open. So I think Devin Bush had a game that was kind of a wake-up call for him. He's been awesome all year, but this year he was very confused.
His game.
He was very confused. He got better in the second half, but still a learning experience for him. And I think he's obviously a great player, but this was I'm still a true sophomore kind of moment.
Yeah, and so moving forward, I guess the pertinent question is, as you look at the upcoming opponents, who, if anyone, will be able to tax Michigan or test Michigan in the ways that we saw Penn State tax and test Michigan?
The next three opponents can't throw the ball at all, so I'm fairly confident that the defense will rebound to their previous standard, which is they give up about 10 points a game.
Yeah, and Hornibrook isn't going to be a read option threat at Wisconsin. Really.
No,
well,
but
Wisconsin's running the ball
but they
again.
Can run it and pass.
And so, I mean, it was always to me going to be the case. And this is, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that Wisconsin by any stretch is going to be easy, but it's a relative assessment. These two road games that we were pointing to, Penn State was always the game that was going to be tougher to me. They were always the team. That was most capable of pulling away, of getting up a couple of scores and putting your offense or challenged offense in the position where they got to throw themselves back into the game, which is not an ideal scenario this year. Penn State or Wisconsin, on the other hand, plays the style that I think is conducive to Michigan having a much better chance to win a game on the road. It's going to be a slugfest.
Well, I mean, but they're also running the ball with startling efficiency this year compared to what they were doing last year. And, I don't know. I mean, they got a lot of big boys up front. I mean, if we're going to play 3-3-5 against that, I think that's going to be tough, too.
They won't do that.
Well, I
hope
not.
They won't do that.
I mean, they ran a 4-3 against Michigan State in those situations. So, you know, you've got some beef that you can put in there. I thought Monet had a disappointing game, but we've seen him play very well in limited snaps for the rest of the year.
And from my point of view, until Ohio State, there's no more redcoats and revolutionaries to deal with. I mean, you're playing against more... ordinary offenses, and so I'm more optimistic, at least coming into the game against.
Well,
Ohio
I mean,
State.
And also if we go to Penn State 10 times and play that game 10 times, I don't think the defense is going to play that poorly again, right? I mean, I think Penn State played really well. I think we had an off game. Let's move on.
And yet, I think Penn State wins seven, eight of those times.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. So,
maybe
13
9
points for Michigan is about average, I imagine.
Yeah. So,
well, I mean, we got to talk about that, too. I mean, I think they could have scored more points. I mean, they had the turnover, not the turnover. I mean, they were stopped a couple times at fourth down. There was five drops that were.
Yeah, there was the,
inexplicable.
There was the screen out to Peoples-Jones when we were still only vaguely in the game, and that could have been a big play. It just depends. I mean,
that was the only real flat-out drop.
Yeah. The one with Gentry at the end of the game, with Perry in the first half.
No, the Perry one was not a flat-out drop. Like
he had two hands on the ball.
He had one hand on the ball.
He had two hands near the ball. He's a receiver. He's getting a scholarship at the University of Michigan. I mean, that's a drop to me. And there was a couple other ones in
there.
That's
okay. I'm used to you being completely wrong.
Here we go.
We can go watch the tape, man.
This is what we pay. This is what we get.
Brian Cook, you could have gotten you could have gotten two hands on that ball and come down with it.
Brian's taller than Perry.
I mean, I do this every week. I've judged every pass for 10 years.
Well, you get some wrong.
That's a marginal throw. It's not totally inaccurate. It was catchable, but calling that a flat drop is incorrect.
Yeah, I actually agree with Brian.
I have to admit it. I agree with Brian on this too. I don't think, but the one to me that sticks out is the one where we could have gotten back in the game maybe with Peoples-Jones.
The biggest drop in the game. Well, I guess I can't remember off the top of my head where they were. But Khalik Hudson's drop in the end.
Oh yeah, that was it. Was 14-6 at that point. Yeah, and if he catches that, it's 14-13. So
I also would not classify that as a drop.
Me neither.
You wouldn't?
No.
No, I wouldn't either, but he could have caught it. I mean, he was close to catching it.
So, the offense, like it has been for the last 6 years, it often feels like it's one block away from a great play. So everybody's really upset about the first two drives, and I go back and I look at them, and each of those four runs that did nothing – there was one block that Michigan screwed up that prevented it from being a successful play. On the first play of the game, they block that to the safety, but Mason Cole lets a guy through him on the outside, and that's the difference between a 20-yard play.
I think that game was another thing that did stick out to me offensively was, you know, we focused so much on the right side, and that wasn't the only place they had problems in this game.
No, I mean, it's always like a different guy. Like on the second play, it was Henry Poggi going to the wrong gap. So it's I don't know if there's an easy solution to that because I've been saying this.
Well, I got to give you credit. Let me pause because, you know, about four games ago, you said this offensive line kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, I think, you know, I'm going to give them a shot to get better. I think we understand. It's very clear now that the ceiling is only so high for this offensive line for the protection unit this year.
For the protection, yeah. The pass protection is what it is. Yeah. I feel like they have improved
running
on the
ball.
Ground.
Yeah.
Well, and the numbers bear that out. I've actually looked at the adjusted line yards, which is a way of assigning credit for running plays to the offensive line. So, for example, last couple years we've been under 3 yards per rushing attempts. And this game we're actually 3.5. Which I was actually kind of shocked. It didn't feel like that, but what happened was you were getting a lot of good plays in the 5 to 7 yard range. Even if you take out some of those Okorn scampers, which actually count in this stat, like that's a pretty good performance for the line against a decent defense.
And throwing one more.
We've been above 3 each of the last 2 games against Indiana, which actually has a pretty good run defense, and Michigan State as well.
And don't forget to mention, I believe there's no tackles for loss in
there.
No tackles for loss.
Okay. I believe there were no tackles by the running backs in the run game, so that's a big stat for the offensive line, too.
Yeah, I think, and this is what I got back to with those that were, you know, called in talking about the offense in this game. Look, game flow is everything for Michigan. They cannot be in a position in the game where they can't lean on the run. If they have got to throw the football and the opposition can just pin their ears back like they could in the second half, that's advantage opposition all day long. So when they got off schedule this game, certainly when they got up 2 scores, I was surprised when they got up 2 scores and Michigan came back and got essentially even. But then when they went down 2 scores again, you knew it was canceled.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, we're not going to be the sort of team that's going to make big comebacks through the air. People are going to pin their ears back, come after us, and we're not a good enough pass-blocking team either with the – with the line in general, with the right tackle, with the running backs, it's a problem.
Yeah, the pass protection is bad. They've allowed sacks on over 10% of the pass plays this season.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's not good. The college football average is 6.
So, I mean, Ed mentions, the line yards, and the reason that Michigan's run game doesn't correspond to actually being able to get those first 5 yards is that those safeties, we've seen them inside the 10 yards, sitting at 8 yards ever since O'Korn came in. So that's a really tough way to live. You can block plays really well, and then if the safety tackles at 3 yards, well, there goes.
Yeah, that's like we have no respect for your ability to throw the football at all.
And that's been the case for most of the year.
Yeah, Herb Street wrote an article this week saying that he felt the problem with the Michigan offense was that they just couldn't attack you over the top at all, and that
I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, and that.
Well, I mean,
and that in any vague, running situation, they're just coming downhill at you, and you've got more guys to block.
Do wonder why they haven't tried that Gesicki stuff with
Gentry. Yeah, I don't know either.
Because like the thing about those fades that they were throwing to the corner is, the ones to Hamilton, those are out in like 2 seconds because they're in the air so long. And we've seen O'Korn be able to hit that throw in the spring game, and then he hit Tariq Black on it in the Florida game.
Well, and he hit Crawford in the first half of this on that kind
of
fade.
That was a great catch, by the way.
Yeah, it was his best catch of the year.
Towards the sideline.
Good throw, too, because he was getting blown up on a zero blitz.
Yeah, yeah, that was a terrific.
Stared it down. That was his
which leads
play.
To a question that Sam raised in the break, which is about Peters and O'Korn, everybody's talking about that. We haven't talked about it much, really. I think O'Korn should probably start again this week. Probably it makes sense if you get ahead or to give Peters some snaps.
You guys remember the Florida game? Jim said afterward, look, John O'Korn was always going to get some series in this game.
Yeah.
It happened to line up with Wilton throwing 2 pick-sixes, so hey, now's the time to get him in. But I think the same sort of logic applies here when it comes to Brandon Peters, because as I said earlier in the show, you've had one quarterback knocked out for the season, just had another quarterback sacked 7 times. Your quarterback, you said over 10% of the pass plays, quarterback's getting sacked. Backup always needs to be ready, but for Michigan, really needs to be ready. And then at the same time, it gives you that glimpse of, a clearer view of the quarterback competition for next year. So it's development for the present, development for the future, see how it goes. Again, not starting him, but making sure that he gets a couple of series in the game.
Yeah, I might go for the Brady Henson thing where one guy gets the first quarter, one guy gets the second quarter, and then you see what happens. I mean, this is a game where you should expect Michigan to be able to run the ball and to be able to shut down the opposing offense. So that game states thing is going to be in their favor as far as the quarterback switch goes.
Yeah, readiness is a function of your situation, right? How ready you are is kind of related to
those goalposts that move.
It's kind of related to how soon you might be thrust into the fold, and they got to kind of be looking at it like that.
But it's also Rutgers too, so it's a game where you can get even if we had won the last couple game, it's a time where you can get the redshirt freshman some snaps.
See, but you guys do get the point though that you can't, if you are coaching the team and one guy is even if it's a little better, but everyone can kind of see this is the guy that gives us the best chance. He's kind of the leader. If you come in like a lot of our callers say and say, hey, look, we're playing for development for the future, then you can't turn around and say, Mo Hurst, don't think about the draft right now. Or when people were critical of Jabril Peppers, when they thought that he was mailing it in and not playing in the bowl game because he was concentrating on the draft. I mean, he took a lot of shots from Michigan fans over that when if he applied the logic that some fans are applying now, why the hell would he play in a bowl game? Why would any of these guys play in a bowl game this year if it's not going to be a national championship or the Rose Bowl?
And isn't it somewhat demoralizing if players can see that this is your best guy and all of a sudden you're not playing him?
And that's my point. That's my point. If they come to practice, if a senior comes to practice and he realizes that the focus for the team now isn't necessarily giving us the best chance to win right now. The focus is next year. Then why should my focus be on trying to win games right now?
I don't think inserting Brandon Peters says that.
Well, we don't know because we're not in practices, and we don't see how close they are. If they're close and the players perceive them as being close, then what you're saying makes sense.
I'm asserting that they're close.
Okay, but you have no basis for that assertion.
I do.
Oh, okay.
It's the last three games.
All right.
So, hey, look.
I don't know.
You can do both, though. You can play the guy that gives you the best chance based on your assessment, and you can start getting Brandon Moore ready. We'll see if they do that. You know, I hope that's what they the course of action that they take. We got jam packed phone lines. Are we got chance to time to get to any of these phones before the break?
No.
Yes, we do.
Hang up on all of them.
Jose in Farmington Hills. How you doing, Jose?
I'm doing all right. What's up, fellas?
How you doing?
I'm all right. Hey, did some caller try to call me out earlier today, Sam?
And you get called out all the time, Jose.
Oh, man. We're going to have to do something about that. But my question to the fellas is,
I say they don't put this
like, with the way this defense is being coached, I think they're going to be set up to overreact in a lot of games. And it's going to always give up points early on in a game.
So,
anybody would know about overreacting, it would be Jose.
So Jose. on what basis do you make that statement? Because Michigan.
On what basis?
Jose, wait. How many games has Michigan played this year? What's their current record? Do you know their current record?
Yeah, it's a sorry 5-2.
They're 5-2. And in how many of those games has the defense performed poorly?
Well, they performed poorly in a lot of spots in the Michigan State
and
game.
And how many of those games has the defense performed poorly? Just give me a number.
I would say probably about 10 times.
How can they haven't played 10 games? What are you talking about? Dude,
I'm counting as snaps, okay?
You can't set the criteria. I said, give me how many games they perform poorly as a defense. Give me how many games. This is not hard.
Well, I would say Indiana,
Penn State. No, they did not. All right. They performed poorly in one game this year. And in that game, now, give the opposition credit. I give their coaching staff credit. They had some tactical things that were great. They had some great players. But then there are some things that Michigan just didn't do well either that they can try to correct moving forward. But that's the exception is the point and not the rule. So you're saying that based on that one game and not the six games prior, that's what you're going to use to determine what this defense is going to be down the stretch here, where all of they are going to overreact to all these teams and they're going to have a great deal of success. I would offer you that these next three games are going to look a lot like the first six.
Yeah. I mean, we're the number one defense in the country coming into that game from almost any measure. So
you're just being a hater when you say that. You're just being Phil.
I don't talk to people like that anymore.
Let's talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, what's up?
It's always interesting to follow calls like that. One of the reasons a lot of people were so happy Harbaugh was hired is they figured that if Michigan was going to get beat, then we were going to get beaten by teams simply with better talent, that we weren't going to get beat because our coaching staff was simply not up to the task. You know, a little bit of the narrative has crept in all this season that, well, you know, the coaching staff is getting out-coached in these situations. Do you guys think that's a silly take on the situation? And, B, do you think Drepno is still here next year? Thank you.
It's tough to tell because you have so many deficiencies. You have a right tackle, and that goes back to Michigan's recruiting early in Harbaugh's career. You have a right tackle who's not very good, and that kind of limits what you do. You're starting quarterbacks out. Nobody respects your passing game.
And so let's be clear with the right tackle. Logan Tooley-Tillman was kicked off the team, and Grant Newsom has a career-threatening injury. So
there are reasons for that, among them the Devery Hamilton flip.
Yeah.
So he's starting at Stanford, and I'm just he's killing me. But the blocking is better. Like I was kind of peeved about Drevno early, but they've improved a great deal.
You mean the run block?
The run block. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything you can do about the pass block. to be that's blunt.
I mean, don't you think that at least the left side can get better?
The left side's all right. Like they're not great, but Mason Cole is never going to be a great pass protector as a left tackle.
Like, yeah, he's out of position.
Right. Yeah, he's a center. Yeah. And he's an NFL center, but he's playing left tackle for us. So the Newsome injury really exposed Michigan in that regard. And I don't think you can really complain about Don Brown unless you have the memory of a mayfly. So.
Unless you can't count. How many games did Michigan perform poorly defensively?
10. You keep talking about this guy. I didn't listen. You should listen.
10? They played 7 games, Jose.
They didn't have the greatest game against Indiana.
Putting some crazy guy on the air.
Don's question is not a silly one by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's not. But I don't think it's...
You know, but we've got deficiencies at this point.
So. Yeah, I mean, with the wide receivers, like, I'm a little bit skeptical that they don't actually have a wide receivers coach. I mean, Pep Hamilton's done it, but he's not a wide receivers coach. And but on the other hand, like, they're all freshmen, right? So what do you do?
Yeah, and I hope the drops are more random than systematic coaching issues.
I mean, drops seem just like a
jugs machine thing.
Right, yeah.
that's what that seems like. We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side, take more of your phone calls, emails, and tweets. All right, guys, let's go to the phones and go to Detroit, talk to Ariel. Ariel, what's up?
Sam, how you doing?
Doing
hey,
great.
Sam, how you doing?
How you doing?
Hey, unfortunately, when Michigan struggles, you get haters and foolish calls like Jose and Phyllis calling a station. You know what? People like that, they say outlandish things on purpose for attention. So it's up to us to just ignore them. If you ignore them, they go away.
Oh, you're a man not from Brian's man, close no, to Brian's heart, right?
Yeah.
What you got? What question you have for us today, Ariel?
Okay. My question is, do you believe that we will see Brandon Peters for the end of the year? And also, do you think that Peters is a man that will take Michigan forward, or do you think it's going to be McCaffrey?
I do think we'll see him before the season's over. I'd be shocked if we didn't see him before the season's over. The question's when. I hope we see him in this game. Who will it be between Dylan and Brandon? I think it'll be a competition. I really do. I think that in Brandon, you have a guy that is a superior physical talent. He has the frame. I mean, the guy's, legit 6'5". He's mobile, and he is a superb arm talent. He just has traits you can't teach. What Dylan has over him, so Dylan is a 6'4 kid. He's mobile. He's just as mobile, if not a hair more than Brandon. He is not the arm talent that Brandon is. Brandon's...
He's a very skinny kid.
I think he'll bridge the gap. Yeah. I think he'll bridge the gap physically. And we talked to Scott Turner, Michigan offensive analyst, who was a quarterback's coach with the Vikings. And he kind of talked about with Dylan the need to build up his upper body. That will close the gap arm strength wise. But I don't think he'll ever have as much zip as Brandon. What he has over Brandon right now, though, is Dylan McCaffrey is a natural born leader. Yeah, he's a McCaffrey. So he comes in the door with that kind of command mentality that Jim is looking for. Now, getting command of the playbook is that's a time sensitive thing. But the mentality that they're trying to nurture in Brandon is already there inherently in Dylan. So that's why I think it's going to be a pretty good competition.
I mean, there's been an incredible and unfair amount of trash talked about Brandon Peters on the internet. Just rumors about like the fact that he's not outgoing and all that stuff. He was not like the McCaffrey stuff, and people are treating him like he's Rain Man, and
they
like,
are.
It's unjustified, and we're gonna see him, and we're gonna see if he works out. And like, hey man, Rain Man was good at Black.
Yeah, Jack. I think the kid has a world. I mean, look, talent alone, he is their best guy. But there's more to the position than talent. So just because he's the most talented guy doesn't mean he's going to be the guy that wins the position down the line. It is going to be a true competition. But anyone that's writing him off, you know, as a redshirt freshman is just it's being totally unfair.
And in terms of next year, they got two quarterbacks coming in next year, one of whom, the one they just recruited, is having a really good fall.
Kevin Doyle.
Yeah, he's having a good fall. And so, you know, and it isn't impossible for a first or second year guy to come in and play. I mean, you've got at BC, my friend Scott Leffler has a guy named Anthony Brown who's playing great. They've won their last two games, putting a lot of points up. He's a true freshman. I don't think he was highly recruited. And they've got you got Josh Jackson from Saline at Virginia Tech, who's a redshirt freshman who's playing very well, as is Virginia Tech. So it's possible for a young guy to come in. It's not ordinary, but it can happen.
It's, you know, I tend to not take exceptions and make them the rule. Last time Michigan did so successfully was Chad Henne.
And Chad Henne was working with some training wheels named Braylon Edwards.
Braylon Edwards, right. True. And eventually Mike Hart. You know, once you get in the Big Ten play, now you got Mike Hart getting 200 yards a game. So you had some dynamics at play.
Absolutely.
That kind of eased the burden on the young quarterback. And, you know, for Michigan, they certainly didn't have that this year.
No.
So, you know, the scenarios just weren't totally similar. That's not saying, again, to be clear, that's not saying that we shouldn't see Brandon Peters start to get snaps now.
I mean, I would be surprised if we don't see him get snaps this week. I mean, I'd be surprised if he starts, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't get snaps.
Yeah, he won't start. I mean,
but we're not talking like garbage time snaps. Should we?
No, he's talking meaningful series.
Yeah, so. I would be surprised too.
Let's go to the phones, go to South Lyon and talk to Greg. Greg, what's up? Hey, Greg, what's
up? How you doing?
Doing great.
How you doing? Yeah, Greg with a C, not Greg, but how you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Good. Okay, I was just wondering, like, how come we can't roll our quarterback out? You know, we're getting bull rushed all the time. Roll him out, give him a chance to throw. And the other question I got is you got McSorley throwing to a 6'8 guy out there. He just throws it to a spot, and he goes up and gets it. Why can't we do that with Zach Gentry? You know, I just don't get it.
Well, all right, I will run those suggestions by the coaching staff.
I mean, you're seeing a corn roll out, not as much in the Penn State game, but that's naturally happening with his pass protection. And then Gentry, jump balls to Gentry.
Well, I don't disagree with him, but yelling at us about it isn't going to do anything.
A couple times this year that has happened. But
has there been one up high to Gentry, though, where he can really use
there
his
There was the
play?
Purdue one where they showed zero and they ran it and O'Korn found him. So that was a good play. Let's just see what happens if we do that seven times a game.
Yeah. All right, Craig, before we go, 60 seconds. Basketball observations from practice yesterday.
I've been to two this week. It's hard to say at this point in time. I think
we're talking about practice.
Yeah, I think we'll have a better defensive and rebounding team this year. I don't think we'll be as good offensively as my initial instinct. It's just hard. It's hard to say.
It's funny to hear Yaklich say. They said, "What stat are you most concerned with? That you want to focus on most right now?" He said, "Defensive rebounding." It's like, and you work for John Beilein. That's your most important stat.
Well, I mean, I think
Livers
kid will be a big help there. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes. I think Matthews is a better rebounder.
How do the bigs look? I want to – Teske.
Well, you mean Big Nasty. And the Big Bull. Yeah, that's their nickname.
I mean, I miss
the Big Bull, the Big Nasty.
Please let that be true.
No, it's not yet.
No.
Not
yet. I'm just giving you the honest.
Oh, Sam. At least he said yet.
I said yet. I gave it some hope.
Yeah, so. I mean, he said Teske is running ahead of Davis.
Which is not a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, Davis was scout team. It's like O'Korn.
Yeah.
He was scout team last year. Teske was in the extended rotation, but in the rotation. And now Davis is in the rotation. The eyes are on him. He's facing the real live bullets, and it's an adjustment for
but,
him.
But, you know, the thing about Davis that was a surprise, he really does have a nice-looking shot. Good rotation on the ball, has some range.
I don't care about that. I care about rebounding and defense.
We'll be better.
All right, we'll get into that next week. That'll do it for today's show.
it better than us!
No!